Good morning, everybody. Welcome into another edition of Football 52. This is episode number 7, and Coach Ed Lamb, as always, well, not as always, he's making his comeback. He was out last week. Thank goodness he made it back okay. Got caught in some of that nasty snow. We'll get into that in a moment, but we've got episode 7 here ready for you, and I got a cheat sheet now, Coach. We got our page specific put together at 1310kfk.com, where folks can now go find every single episode of this podcast from episode 1 to, episode 7, which will be put out on the podcast as soon as we finish up here. So it also helps me keep track. I don't have to just try to guess anymore, because I know once we get into double digits, things are going to get interesting. So now we have the web page there, where you can go back and listen to every single podcast. So, Coach, you can go back and you can evaluate how you've done, how we've done each and every week, because I know that's what coaches do.
Thanks for your work on that. It's interesting to see those episodes stack up. When we started this thing, it was the dead of winter.
Yeah.
As we look out there today, it's going to be, I think, close to 70 degrees and the sun's shining in the windows here. And it happened really quickly.
Sun's in your eyes right now, but maybe, it's March, so we could get something interesting coming in this weekend. Crazy for you last week. You got a chance to get out for a bit for spring break. And I obviously know with our family dynamics, as we've talked, those can present some interesting challenges. But sounds like for the most part, things went pretty good. But then you get caught up in the weather. And then, yikes, it's kind of scary times.
Yeah, thanks for assistant head coach Aaron Fernandez filling in
for
me last week with you. We had a chance to take our son to a specific ski camp designed for autistic kids. And, we had no idea if we were even going to get him to be able to keep a helmet on because he's really resistant to that kind of a thing. But we worked with him for a few weeks on helmeting, and they even worked with him on that at school. And so we were able to get him up there. It was at Snowmass Ski Resort, and a great program through a group called Ascendigo, and they specialize in autistic adaptive camps, both in the summer and in the wintertime. And they did a great job with him. By the end of the 3 days, he was actually able to get about maybe 7 to 10 seconds of unassisted skiing on a really gradual slope. But he got the feel for it, and you could see that in his eyes and his face kind of lit up. But he also had a great time, probably even a better time, just riding the gondolas and just being out. You know how it is. Anybody with a differently abled kids, I think, can understand that just new activities, places, things like that can be a challenge to create for them, but such a rewarding experience for those kids.
Well, Coach, the drive alone, we've talked about that. A lot of people don't understand, they'll come up to you, hey, you guys ought to come out here, do this, Parents like us, we start thinking through, okay, how long of a drive is that? Can we make that drive? I grew up in Eastern Colorado, about 3.5 hours from here, and our child has not been able to go out and visit because, the drive, for one thing, is difficult, but then you get there, and that's not his area. That's not his space. Those are not his things. Our entire basement has become a sensory workshop for him. So when we go somewhere else, and my dad, who's a bachelor living, farm life, he doesn't have swings hanging up all over the place. I'd be concerned if he did, to be honest with you. But he doesn't have all that stuff. So it's amazing. Getting there is one thing. Then actually being there is another. And then trying an activity like skiing. So it's a pretty big week, pretty significant week for you guys, for your entire family.
For sure. Despite all of the things that you and I can share and bond over, the challenges, the saying really is true. If you've met one autistic kid, you've met one autistic kid.
Oh,
they're
all
so different. And some of them hate the car and some of them love the car. And it truly is a spectrum. Well, my son loves to drive if you're moving. And when you stop, it's a major problem. And even stop signs, you can hear him kind of grunting and trying to get through it, like, hey, what are you slowing down for?
Yeah, what are we doing
that,
here?
But we know what his grunts mean. And so you want to talk about a challenge. It was great going up there, very smooth sailing, no traffic. We left on a Sunday, and so it was really smooth. We stayed in Glenwood Springs, and then all of that was great. The camp was great. But then we came back on Thursday morning and at 8 in the morning. The expectation would be, at least the planning of the trip, that we'd be back by noon. easily, and ended up having a 14-hour drive with the road closures on I-70, 285. We had jackknife semis. We passed at least 50 cars off the side of the road. We had two different cars, and normally, I mean, I have a heavy-duty pickup that I drive. My wife was behind me in an all-wheel drive, and normally I'm the guy who, like, I'm prepared. I've got my tow strap. I want to help in those situations, but I couldn't do that because my son was behind us.
Right.
And, you know, like, I had to get him home, and I still can see some of those faces of people that we passed who I think ended up staying out there all night long because, you know, once you're stuck, you know, that late at night and the plows aren't coming through and the wreckers aren't coming through, It was a sad scene for a lot of people, but it took us 14 hours overall with all the closures and delays.
Wow. I mean, and that drive too. I mean, but for the most part, obviously you guys, it's slow go, but I'm glad to hear that that your son did so, you know, well considering the circumstances.
He did amazing. He made it back, and he had his sisters in the car with him, and that's always big. It's just, you know, they know the music that he likes. They know when he's starting to get agitated. They know how to reach out to him, try to make it fun, talk to him, give him the right snack at the right time. So my wife and I would be lost without them. At some point, we're gonna lose them, and it's just gonna be us three, me, Sarah, and my son Edward. And you know, at that point, we'll adapt.
Yeah. Well, and that isn't that kind of what it always is too. I mean, you adapt. There's just new things that you experience every single time, and whether it's a trip or whether it's just being at home, you got to find different ways to adapt. And it seems like good parents find a way to do it. They figure it out.
That's right. Yeah, an old coaching adage is, you know, great ones adjust. Great ones adjust and lead is the way we adapted into our football program. GOAL, the acronym GOAL, great ones adjust and lead. And that needs to carry over into the family life of anyone who's dealing with these, adaptive kids.
Last week was fun too, Coach, for the podcast. And again, glad you guys made it back. Okay, glad to have you back in the studio. But Aaron Fernandez, he made some promises to me that I hope you can live up to. I mean, he told me, hey, he said I could call a play in the spring game. I've been thinking about it, same play, but I've been thinking about exactly how that's going to go down. So I can't wait to get out and see you guys in action, which is next week. Next week we get into spring action.
Next week is when we start spring. Last year, We had about eight or nine practices where the weather significantly impacted the practice throughout spring practice. And I've got no problem with the cold or the rain or the wind. It's like when they're all together and it's, it's 28 degrees out, but the wind is also blowing 28 miles an hour and there's precipitation coming down. It can get pretty messy. And I thought we sacrificed some ability to, compete in advance last spring. So we've actually set up our practices this year with a flex schedule, and we're going to work around the weather. I'd still like to get some poor weather practices in. I've talked to you about that before. I think that's key to being a playoff caliber team at the FCS level. You've got to be ready to play in this region. A lot of the best teams in the country are in this mountain region or in the North or Midwest. And so we need those, and we need to be known as a bad weather football team and take a lot of pride in that. But, out of our 15 practices that were allotted for the spring, we need to have probably the commensurate amount of good weather practices, too, that we would expect to play good weather games or fair weather games. And there's a lot more of those than there are, bad weather games.
So what do you look for, Coach, when it comes to spring? Because I always think this is so interesting because, you get into spring mode, you guys are getting to – your practices, obviously flex schedule kind of depends on what that looks like. But for the most part, you're trying to get them into that regimen. But then you got a break after spring ball. Once the spring game is done, later in April, then it's break again. What do you look for? I mean, are you, do you go into this kind of thinking, yeah, we might get some sloppy stuff, but it's about getting installs in. It's about seeing who's got the right attitude. What are those key things that you're really looking for at this stage?
Different teams, different times, different goals. We spent a lot of time thinking about that. I spent a lot of time thinking about that, talking with my staff. I can remember a time where we had things, rolling at Southern Utah, and we had an expectation of winning a championship every year. I think BYU was similar. And the idea then in my mind most of the time was to, by the end of spring practice or near the end of spring practice, somehow get back to where you ended the previous season, the bowl game or the playoffs or the, you know, the championship game, whatever. Can you get back to that type of level of execution, understanding of the playbook and commitment level, you know, that type of litmus test. I think for us right now, what we're really trying to find throughout the off-season training conditioning program and into spring football, who are the winners? Who's winning their position group? We're keeping a lot of statistics on lifting, running, and now we're going to continue to do that through spring practice, do a lot of one-on-ones, do a lot of small-sided work, you know, two-on-two, three-on-three, seven-on-seven, nine-on-seven. Who's winning the day? And actually, we need to get that in front of the team to challenge the guys who aren't winning at a high enough rate to be at the top of their position group and reward the guys who are winning. And that really is the focus of our program right now. If we want to win games, we've got to win individual battles.
And that starts, I mean, it's already started, you know, talking about the workouts that we've been discussing over the course of this span, just doing talking about this on the podcast. So it starts already. It's already started. But winning the day, I know that's something that's so key when you talk about that, because it's, you can't look forward. You can't go too far, and you can't be looking at the schedule for next season. You can't be breaking into that. It has to be wake up early, get ready to go, what that looks like in that day. You got to find a way to win it. How difficult is that to get through to young people's minds that it is about today? You got to focus on this and win, and by the end of it, you got to feel like you've really accomplished something.
Jim Harbaugh, when I was working for him, he used to just call it empirical data, and he would get excited about that phrase itself and talk to coaches and players about it, being that, hey, let's put this in front of the whole team. What is the empirical data? You can say you're the fastest. You can say you're the strongest, but is it showing up in the testing? Is it showing up in practice that you're the best player? And so we provided that on a daily basis. Looking back a year ago to our spring practice, it was about getting in systems of offense and defense. We weren't even working on the leadership or hierarchy of a position group through the revelation of empirical data. And we're now into a next and higher phase to me of team development.
Wow. And that's what's fascinating too, that data that comes in, it's something, again, people don't think about that. They don't think about the workouts and how you're winning there and how that's going to change you as a player. We always just think, you know, the obvious things. What are, you know, who's better at that position? But there's just so many things that go into that, which ultimately makes them better at that position and makes them better throughout the course of the year. And that's why I find it so fascinating when you're just looking at the individual workouts and how people are bettering themselves then. Because if they can grow from day one to day whatever in their individual workouts, then that's going to bode well for how they progress throughout a regular season.
Yeah, feedback, accountability, just knowing where we're at, right? Being measured, it's a great experience for these players to go through. It, you know, we want players that are confident. We want players that believe they should have the ball, that they should be in the game. And we want them to talk about that, be able to voice that, hey, I'm the best player. I should be the number one on the depth chart. But when we start to give them data, I think there's clear areas where they know they need to improve. And so just to walk around and say you're the best player is not really a part of our language right now.
Yeah.
It's, okay, well, are you the strongest? Are you the fastest? And if you want to be – if you're not the strongest and the fastest and you just want to say you're the best because of the intangibles, then that's what I want to hear you brag about. You know, we let's not just leave it to this kind of nebulous idea of being the best. If you're the best at your position group because of intangibles, then go ahead and brag about that, which is not something that a lot of guys want to do, right? They don't want to say, I try the hardest. They just want to say they're the best. So this empirical data is really helps guys, I think, sort the team, sort the leadership, sort the opportunities. And if you're not measuring up, it gives you your task too. Okay, well, how do I measure up better? But also, it really is about performance at practice and performance
sure.
in games. And you don't have to be the biggest and the strongest and the fastest to be the best player. But you need to know what your attributes are. What are your best attributes? What is it that's raising you to the top of the depth chart?
I think that's interesting too. Shout out to a former UNC Bear, Brooks, who always, you know, I keep in contact with him. He was a good leader here. And obviously the Bears were struggling in those years when I would talk to him and have him on the show. And he would always talk about how his goal, I don't know which lift it was, if it was deadlifts or whatever. And I remember talking to him on my show about that, thinking, that's interesting. You know, you're wanting to win that and you guys are struggling at this point. But after getting to know you more and to hear that, that Brooks guy, a good friend of mine, had that in his mind, like, hey, you know what? I can control this right now. I'm going to get better at this, and hopefully that translates on the field. Well, come to find out, not a lot of guys were viewing things probably that way. Imagine if they did, you know, and you know, even talking to him off the record and stuff, you know, he brings that up, like he was really focused on that. Not a lot of people cared if they won this battle in the weight room. And that's what you're trying to get, is a bunch of guys like that, that really view that as a, not a small victory, but a victory. And then those victories stack up. When we say stacking days and all that, that's a good phrase now in sports. That's what will impact you in the regular season. So when you get one or two or five or six guys that believe in that, it's probably not, you're probably not going to be that successful. But when you get 90% plus of your team getting behind that, you got to imagine that's going to take off for this team.
Absolutely. Yeah. And every player just needs to know, okay, what is my route to get better? It was an interesting study kind of being with Kalani Sitake. He, when he came up as a coordinator, had some really good players at the University of Utah. One of them is Eric Weddle, but I could go on and on about the number of guys who went on and played in the NFL. And of course, I've always had great defenses at the University of Utah. And Kalani and I were close and had a lot of closed door meetings where it's, you know, where we can speak freely. And one of the things he really believed in is you know, you hear coaches sometimes say there's no such thing as a gamer. And he liked to say that's all there is gamers. And I get the it's just a different approach to winning, right? What he's saying is, you know, don't judge players so much on practice and off-season conditioning and stuff like that, that you're forgetting who the guys are that are going to win. And there's power in that. And I understood where he was coming from. And he would always use Eric Weddle, who was kind of a guy that would really kind of almost brush off the coaches in practice. But Eric Weddle was an amazing three-way player, offense, defense, special teams. Sure. He continued to do that in the NFL. I mean, just so productive at all levels of football that he played. I remember him from high school. I was down in the Inland Empire recruiting. I knew his high school coach really well. I saw his college career up close. And then one of the cool things is Eric Weddle's wife is from a town called New Harmony, which is right next to Cedar City. And so in the off season, Eric Weddle would come and train at our facility at SUU, and he would come talk to our players. Well, I saw Eric Weddle away from coaches, and he worked his butt off. And I never wanted to contradict Kalani on that because I understood where he was coming from. He was making a good point, and he's the head coach, and I needed to learn and buy in from that conversation. But Eric Weddle, you know, he trained on – when he was on vacation in the summers, he trained with us at SUU. Like, there was no lack of work ethic on his part. So that's where we're trying to get with our team is, okay, what type of worker are you? When do you put in your work? It doesn't have to all look the same, but you got to earn this thing at this level of college football.
You don't want to get a bunch of Allen Iversons that are talking about practice all the time. Well, and I think about that connection too, because he was one of the greatest players to ever play the game. Yeah. Imagine how good he would have been. Maybe if he took that focus into the practice side of things. Like I read George Carl's book, Furious George, talking about Iverson showing up. Maybe there's a certain smell on his breath that wasn't, very, very good. But that guy was great when the game hit. But imagine if he would have been just a little bit better or a lot better, maybe winning some championships if he took practice seriously.
Yeah, it's true. And I've coached a lot of players that I had to learn that it wasn't necessarily that they weren't competing in practice or that they didn't take it seriously. It's they didn't want the feeling that the coach was judging them just on practice.
Yeah.
And when I listened to Allen Iverson and his rant on that day, that's what I heard, because there's no question in my mind that as good of a player as he was, there's some teammates that would say, oh yeah, Allen Iverson could practice. He would bring it. Like, that's a competitor in every way. You don't get that good without competing at everything. You know, walking upstairs, eating pizza, like everything you do is a competition. I think when you get to that level, everyone that I've ever met that performs in sports at that high of a level, they're competing even when you don't know it. And, when you don't realize it just in everyday life. But, you know, to have the coach coming down and just being nitpicky in practice, I think a lot of those great players or those gamers, as Coach Shitake would call it, I think that's when those players kind of ruffle up and say, hey, you know, this is practice. And I take this serious and I'm a professional and, see me on game day, that kind of thing. And I think there's some of that there's some validity in that for those guys.
Well, sure. I mean, even another guy, another comparison, you talk about Tim Tebow, and he practiced hard, but the idea was always that he struggled in practice. He didn't make a lot of those crazy plays because they're not hitting the quarterback. They're not going as hard in those situations with that quarterback. And then game day, still struggled to throw the ball once in a while, but could move and would make some crazy things happen. And so I remember that was always a fascinating thing. It wasn't that he wasn't working hard. It was just the focus of practice was different than the focus of a game. So there is a balance there.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's Tim Tebow is a great study in so many different ways because of that dynamic. The practice is different than a game, and everybody's level of play rises, and it is a different game. It's a completely different game. Unless you're doing a live scrimmage in the sport of football, practice doesn't look a whole lot like a game.
Yeah, that's why quarterbacks, you know, you see maybe they do have an interesting struggle in practice compared to what it looks like in the game because you're not hitting those guys, you know, and Tebow thrived off. They got better when he got hit, it seemed like.
The two major fundamentals of football are blocking and tackling. And you take out tackling completely from 95% of all practice reps. And really you take out the intensity of blocking. You don't want guys to be blocking to the ground. And so it's really you're faking the two most important fundamentals all practice long in football.
I have wondered this for years, Coach, because, you know, you in high school, and again, I'm getting older now, so I don't know what's legal now, what you could do in high school, but we would practice tackling all the time. I mean, we're practicing tackling, we're practicing hitting. Yeah, the quarterback was treated a little bit differently, but for the most part, you're doing that stuff. When can you practice tackling? And how often can you go 100% in tackling? Because in game time, these guys getting after it. These guys can hurt each other if you're not careful. So what is that process? Like, how often can you go 100% when it comes to tackling and blocking?
Yeah, there's legislation that controls that somewhat. Like, for example, in spring practice, I can't remember the exact number, but I think it's something like seven practices where tackling is allowed. And then there's a certain percentage of practice where tackling is allowed. So, example, you can't do more than 50% on certain days.
Wow.
And it's fairly legislated. There's still a lot of room for coaches to have flexibility and build their team in the way that they want. But we've all seen it where, you know, the harder you practice, the more players you're going to lose. If I go watch a youth practice, those guys can hit and tackle each other all day. There's just not a lot of forced dynamics, and kids aren't getting injured.
Sure.
And that's the time to develop fundamentals. You're not, you know, if you go to an NFL practice, you're not going to see guys tackling live ever. Most NFL teams will go two live plays a week on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or something like that, where they're going to practice goal line and just that kind of the offense needs 6 inches type of play, and we're not going to find out if we're getting low enough and making this tackle unless we actually practice it. So like twice a week is two reps a week per player live. At the college level, we're going to do a little more than that, but we're also, you know, we've got to find that right balance between preparing our guys fundamentally and also being ready to play. We've got to bring a healthy team to Saturday to have any opportunity to win the game.
I think that's such a great point. So much of this too is you're relying on, and obviously this goes into your scouting process too when you're learning about these players. You're relying on them knowing the basics, which, as you said, the two most important things, blocking and tackling when it comes to football, you're relying on them to have learned all of that and to know it backwards and front, know how to do it, know your process, you know the angles and all of that, because you can only practice it so much at this level. But I think it's a phenomenal point that, yeah, you want them practicing hard on that when they're youngsters, when they're high school, because not everybody looks like, you know, an absolute monster when it comes to Division I football when you're in high school. There's a few of those guys on occasion, but not everybody's going to be, you know, Mack truck out there.
Sure. And the model still exists. You know, if you take a player from the time they're 8 years old to the time they're, you know, 28 years old and have had a long NFL career, that model still exists within the 4 to 5 year period at UNC. So if we have for example, a freshman or a sophomore that's not getting a lot of – they're not playing a lot in the game anyway, and they need developmental skills at the fundamental level, right? They're going to do a lot more blocking and tackling in practice. But we have to specialize that. You know, we can't just let them go out and tackle guys that aren't expected to be tackled. We have to actually work a plan for each individual player somehow into a 90-minute to 120-minute practice. It's not easy to do.
I've always wondered that because, you know, when I'm sitting on the couch watching football, Coach, you know, you see a guy miss tackle and you're like, why? Don't they? Well, maybe they don't practice it as much, but it is something where it's it's just a completely different feel. You know, the game is a different feel, and tackling and hitting, that's evolved so much over the years too. You know, we're not doing what Troy Polamalu used to do.
Yeah.
You know, just torpedo and jump over that line and see what happens.
Right.
You are seeing, you know, guys have to take care of those form tackles now, but it's easier said than done.
No, it is. It's incredible to me sometimes. You know, football is so scrutinized from a coaching level. And I hear those comments like, don't they practice tackling? And you know, in basketball, it's fairly easy for a fan to understand. Like, yeah, this guy can make baskets, but he missed.
Yeah.
Or he's missed five threes in a row. It doesn't mean he's not practicing threes. He missed.
Yeah.
And you can miss – if you can miss a basketball shot that's repeatable and oftentimes undefended – you certainly are going to miss a tackle. I mean, you know, breaking tackles is a fundamental. Breaking tackles is a skill. So if we're putting our best the ball in the hands of the best tackle breaker, well, we expect to have some tackles broken. You know, it's just a really interesting dynamic. My wife said this to me one time that I think is like we had a lot of penalties one game and ended up losing. And so in the aftermath on Sunday morning, you know, having breakfast, and Sarah says, hey, do you guys practice penalties? She said it just like that. Do you practice penalties? And like, I couldn't help but
I love
you
that.
Know, go smart aleck on her. And like, okay, let's break it down. What do you mean practice penalties?
Yeah.
Do you mean the avoidance of penalties? Do you mean, do we have yellow flag? You know, and like, that didn't go over very well for me that day.
Well, there's got to be a point too where you're like, too soon. Let's not talk about it yet.
Yeah, you know,
let's recover from that side of it. But that is funny. You know, we've talked about the fans and, you know, fans, you know, why don't you run outside more? Yeah. That's an inside joke there. We've talked about a lot, Coach. But I always think it's funny. I'm at a Nuggets game a couple weeks ago. And they lost to the Phoenix Suns. I'm sitting next to this guy. I don't like going to games like that much anymore because I'm getting crowded the whole time. And he's sitting there like, guy needs to learn how to make some free throws. You know, guy needs to learn how to make – here he's chugging his beer and eating his nachos, got to make some free throws. And one of the points was made about one of my guys, a young player for the Nuggets, Christian Brown, played for Kansas. And his wife sitting next to him and she says, man, he looks so young out there. He goes, yeah, he needs to grow up pretty quick and figure out how to play basketball. That kind of stuff cracks me up sometimes because I'm very quiet when I'm at games. I do enough talking on the shows. But I think that's fascinating too. And to kind of compare that with tackling, free throw shooting, all that stuff, it's not that you don't know how to do it. Sometimes the guy that's going against you just made sure you didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, so those are the kind of things.
This podcast that we do, the time that we put into it each week, I've said to you before, even if nobody was listening, this is really good. The fact that this microphone's in front of my face makes me take it serious. I think about it to some extent throughout the week. I think about things we might want to talk about. We exchange a few messages. It's so worthwhile to me, right? But the only reason that you're allowing me to do this is because there's a chance that people might listen. You know, it might be a fair business model for you, right, in some way. And so people are listening. That's what sports is. So as a coach, I can't really get too upset when fans are critical,
yep,
right?
We got to be able to talk about
they're
it.
They're interested and they have criticism, and that's one of the fun parts of being a fan is being able to say, what is the coach doing? You know, what is the athlete doing? This guy sucks, you know,
and
I could have done it better in my day, that kind of thing. And so I really enjoy that part of it too, even though we can kind of tongue in cheek make fun of some of those comments.
Hey, that's a great point, because that's what makes the world go round as far as sports is the fans talking about it, the media talking about it. And I'm in the media, so I defend that pretty good too on the media side, but that's what you want. You want us analyzing, you want us breaking it down, you know, and when you start to ignore it and not talk about it, that's the problem. So you'd almost rather, and I think that's great that you view it that way, you'd almost rather them be critical. If they're going to be anything, be at least be critical so you're talking about us. That's a
be
big deal.
Yeah, I draw a line with university fundraisers. If there's a university fundraiser with a negative opinion about the job I'm doing, that's out of bounds. Mm. They need to go do something else. They need to come coach. They need to put their career on the line at the whims of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, or they need to go do something else. But that's the only time where I've ever been offended is to hear a criticism from a university fundraiser. And that's never happened at UNC. I should say that just in case anybody's listening.
Well, yeah, I'm starting to know. No, I get you where you're coming from too. I just think that stuff is so interesting, just how practice is. But I like that empirical data.
Mm-hmm.
I like that because I remember, again, small town USA, my basketball coach would always say, hey, if you're unhappy with your playing time, You can come up to me at any point in practice when we're in a break or whatever and ask me, hey, can we meet after practice or at some point? And I will tell you why you're not getting playing time. He would tell us. But what I like about this is you have data. You can tell them, you can have that discussion, you missed a tackle or whatever, but I've got all this data that's showing why you're not getting the playing time you think you deserve, whether it's lifting, whether it's running, whether it's just actual practice reps. This is why, and I think that that is very powerful.
I've been saying it more to our team than I ever have this offseason. It's a big, strong man's game, and I want our players to understand that. So like I said, if you're bringing intangibles to the table, that's certainly a real thing. But this is a big, strong man's game. And I've said it over and over. If what I'm saying, if you don't agree with it, if it doesn't resonate, if it doesn't excite you, if your knee's not shaking right now, if your eyes aren't a little wider, if your blood's not getting hot by the things I'm saying, there's a better place for you. The portal's your friend.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a t-shirt at some point too. Yeah. A little hashtag on there. Yeah. I think that's great. In this day and age especially, if you're not going to follow kind of this philosophy, mm-hmm. then you know there's the door.
That's what it's for.
Yeah, that's what this is all about. We're seeing it. Obviously now basketball, we're seeing it like crazy with the teams that are out that aren't in the NCAA tournament. Transfer portal is heating up again. Yep. But that's that. I love that saying, honestly, Coach. All right. So you brought a book in. Can I make reference to that, or did you just put it out on the
table?
Sure,
yeah. I texted you, General Stanley McCurry. I was doing some reading this book.
You read quite a bit, too.
I do. Yeah, I do like to read. Like I said, I was an English major to avoid math, but I also did enjoy reading.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I really, really enjoy reading. And I've been reading this book, One Mission, by Chris Fussell. I think I'm saying correctly.
Yeah, I trust you.
And their General Stanley McChrystal is one. It's a true story of the United States, really armed forces and mostly special forces and the things that they learned when they were trying to take out Al Qaeda in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, wherever your political views are, whether we shouldn't have been there, that's not even really the point of the book. It was how unprepared we were for that type of warfare, and then how they had to adjust. And yeah, I just came across this this quote the other day by the leading general, basically the leader of that whole theater, and he said as he started to recognize. So he was addressing, I think in this speech, he was addressing special forces units from all branches of the service, and he said, "We are at war, and in war there are winners and losers. We are a force comprised of the most capable, well-equipped, and highly trained warriors the battlefield has ever known. Your actions in the fight have shown that this is true. But make no mistake, we can win every individual battle and still lose. To win, we need to change. If you're not willing to become part of that change, then you will not enjoy being part of this organization moving forward." And that right there, just like, whoa, that struck me, because that's what I've been saying to these guys.
Yep.
And then the last sentence of his, what we are doing now is not working, and I take responsibility for that. I also take responsibility for the change that lies ahead. And it just kind of struck me, because everything he said right there is what I've been trying to say to our players. It's what I've been saying on this podcast. Like, hey, I'm neck deep in our 0-11 season last year. I don't shirk any of that responsibility, but I also know what it takes going forward. I'm convicted about that. I'm going to share that exact plan with you. If you don't like what I'm saying, the way he says it, then you will not enjoy being part of this organization moving forward. That's what I'm saying when I say the portal is your friend. Like, you will not enjoy this moving forward. And we've already had some guys that have decided that. But I've got enough guys looking me back in the eye with excitement. I can see their chest beating. I can see their blood temperature rising. I know that we're on the right track to success. But to see a leader, you know, a United States general, to see a leader, you know, kind of put it in those words and recognize and reflect and see some of what I'm trying to get done here was just, to me, it was something that I thought you might enjoy hearing.
Oh, I love. Well, yeah. you sent me the text, and so I'm going on and looking at videos and different speeches that he's giving, and so much is like that. But I think Aaron Fernandez and I talked about it a little bit too. And again, not to compare directly, but there are similarities in the military and how a team is ran, how a business is ran. I mean, there's a lot of different similarities. It is about leadership. It's about getting people to follow the right leadership and to buy in 100%, whatever that might be. How well do the players, like, do you suggest to them to, you know, hey, this is a book I'm reading right now. Do you suggest to them to read books or even just check out a certain passage from a book and see what that does? That way they can kind of get a little bit of a background of what you're thinking.
I do. Yeah, there's a time and a place for it. You know, certain times of the year I think it's more appropriate. Other times of the year we're under the gun a little bit in terms of our week-to-week preparation for an impending game on Saturday. But, yeah, and a lot of the players they'll approach me individually. You know, I told you we've been going through the book, The Comfort Crisis, and I've been picking, selecting and reading certain passages of that each Friday night at our team meetings. And a lot of the guys have went out, got the book for themselves, started reading it, want to talk about it on the side. And so I really enjoy that type of interaction. And then they'll want to, you know, sometimes suggest something that they've been reading lately. And it seems less and less people are actually reading and more people are listening. And that's fine. I don't get the same thing out of that.
I
can feel my brain working in a different way when I'm imagining what I'm reading. And I don't necessarily get that. I do like having books on tape and podcasts and stuff like that. And I enjoy it and use it. But it's just, it's, to me, it's not the same, particularly when I'm trying to do kind of a professional development effort.
Yeah, with me, like my wife, she always listens to audiobooks because she's always on the go. She's always doing stuff. But she'll joke, you know, she's not joke. She'll just say, I read 20 books this month or something. Like, you listened to 20 books this month. This is a little different. But she has. She's broken into it. I like to have the book in front of me, too, because going back, because my brain will trail pretty quickly if I'm listening to a book. So it is important. But I think that that's fascinating how we learn the fact that you are getting players coming to you saying, hey, I'm reading this and maybe you should check this out too. I think that's really encouraging.
I just heard you say audiobooks, and I think I always refer to it as books on tape, which shows how old I am.
I sometimes do that, too.
I wonder if I say book on tape in front of the players and if they even know what is – like tape to them is something you stick on a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah. No, I still say records and CDs and all. I'm one of the guys that has a CD book in the back of the car, although the car I have now doesn't play CDs, so it's pointless, and the world is changing, and it's scary.
Yeah, it's changing for me. I'm going to keep up where I can, but I might still call it book on tape.
Yeah, I do too. Once in a while, I will break it out. I do have certain books that I like to listen to, but I think you're right when you say the brain is receiving it differently. My brain will go off in different directions in the middle of what I'm listening to, so I'm kind of getting it. But if I do that when I'm reading, it's just easy enough for me to go, boom, right back to where I was, where I can keep track, too. So it's fascinating how the human brain works.
It is. I don't know. I mean, I probably should read up on that. But to me, there's like, you know, reading on Twitter, to me, is not the same as staying with one topic.
Mm-hmm.
My brain doesn't react the same way. Sometimes I'll get lost on trying to gather information on a site like a Twitter or something like that, and then realize several minutes later that, like, I don't really remember anything, and I haven't thought deeply about anything that I've come across. And of course, there's a lot of junk out there, a lot of twittiots.
Bad
out there. There's good stuff too, and that's what I'm searching for. But it's not. It just doesn't have to me the same positive impact on my mind, my feelings. I don't think it's time well spent for me.
Well, so much of the, you know, whether you're getting deep into a good book like this, Coach, or you know, I like to read if there's breaking news, there's big stories that come after the fact. You read into that and it's just, you know, great journalistic work putting that together as opposed to those quick hits that are out on social media and it's a couple of quotes. And that's interesting. But man, when you can actually get in and break into why was this player let go? Why did this coach say this? Or why did this happen? To me, it's fascinating. I just brought up George Carl's book, Furious George. And right now he has a Twitter feud going on or an ex feud with Carmelo Anthony. I think he's more of the one feuding and Melo's kind of ignoring it for the most part. But the background you get from that little feud that when Carl posts stuff and has it, if you go back and you read that book, you have the background and you have all this extra information now in your brain. Or for me, I can use it for my show. It's not just this. It's, oh, we can go back 20 years ago. And I think that that's what, when you're looking at these books too, yes, there's some inspirational speeches, but when you go go behind what led to those inspirational speeches. I think that that's what's powerful when it comes to reading books.
Yeah, that's what I get out of it, right? It's, yeah, not just the quote. I'm sharing the quote. I'm sharing certain passages to the players, but it's all the in between, the context of those quotes and the context of those arguments and,
yeah,
and conflicts. I really enjoy that. Learn a lot from it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that I love that you do that. I think that that's important, and especially with young minds. I think a lot of people get in their heads that, what is it, 18 to 24 year olds typically is that age span in college, that they're just, if they're athletes, great, they're playing sports, they're lifting weights, all that stuff, but they don't care about books. They don't really care about. And I think that we need to be able to put that out, because there are a lot of student athletes, and you probably have a good chunk of those guys that you're seeing the leadership value there, where they really do care about, you know, their schooling. They want to sharpen their brains a lot more. And I think those are the ones that really rise above at the end of the day when they really are dedicating themselves to everything they're a part of.
I agree. That's the only lasting success that I've had in as a coach is with those type of players. There's a, you know, I can mention guys, not by name, of course, that have come through with a lot of talent and not a lot of eye on the future other than football, and had great games, great seasons, but in terms of a sustainable championship level program that also is a benefit in every way to a community, I only want to do that, and I believe it only can be done with the type of players who are well-rounded, who have they may want to play football for as long as they can in the NFL, but they've got other plans as well. And Miles Killebrew, I mentioned him.
Yeah.
You know, he came in and spoke to our team a few weeks ago, just signed a record contract for a special teams guy, $6.5 million over 2 years as a 9-year veteran, and he only plays special teams, not a punter, not a kicker. He's just a coverage guy and a punt blocker. $6.5 million for 2 years, that's the record for a special teams guy. And he was an engineering major, and to talk to him right now in the heart of his earning years in his football career, he still talks about what's coming next, what's coming after that. It may not be engineering, right? But he wants to be a successful businessman after this, and whatever that looks like in the future.
Well, and this will take us down an interesting road too, Coach. You know, when you look at name, image, and likeness now too, we're hearing a lot of different quotes coming out about name, image, and likeness. And I think it was, well, Saban's talking about it. I heard Deion Sanders talk about it. Kirby Smart talked about it. A couple different coaches saying name, image, and likeness is a different thing than what we're doing right now with these collectives. And I'm not going to knock on the collectives or anything. It's just different. This is the name, image, and likeness thing, to me, I always liked, because it does give players that want to separate themselves. Maybe they have an interest in this area. Maybe they are intellectually gifted. Use that gift with your name that you're developing as a football player, basketball player, whatever, and put that towards something. Whether that's doing a radio show, or you're a weekly journalist guest and you write something, or you review something, or even just signing autographs. The collective stuff, I think, is very interesting. Or not just the collective, but just this idea that there's a pot of money somewhere and that's going to go to me for coming to this school. That to me is I'm not going to say ruining, you know, young athletes, but it sure makes it appear as though you're just getting money for showing up and just being here. Where the name, image, and likeness thing should be more of a, you're using your name and image and you're working and you're making something of it, so that you're going to have, you could be a business person, you know, when you graduate, you, whatever you're, if you go pro, whatever, but that's a long lasting approach too. So I think all this stuff kind of connects, and it's fascinating.
Absolutely. I've got enough opinions on where name, image, and likeness, collectives, the open windows for transferring, where that's going. And I believe there's a huge opportunity for schools like UNC because of who's driving this. Now, make no mistake, who's driving the ability to freely transfer and the NIL and the players earning money? Who's driving this is like – it's like eight schools. I mean, it's Georgia. It's Alabama. It's Ohio State. These are the schools. They're going to collect the very best players, and they're not going to be collecting them from high schools anymore. They're collecting them straight from schools like UNC. Well, that seems like it might be, you know, the end of the road for FCS schools or for Group of Five schools. I completely disagree. I've got the math worked out on this thing. I know where the opportunities lie, and I'm so excited when I hear my peers talk about how this is the end of FCS football or we're just going to become another junior college. I completely disagree with that idea.
To elaborate on that for us too. I would love to hear your thoughts on that because I'm guessing it has something to do with the recruiting side of things.
It does, and development, right? So you know, I'm a player. I'm going to hang my hat on player development. That's what I'm best at. That's my niche, and it's not the only way to win, but it is a way to win. These top level schools that can afford to go after these kids in the portal and just basically win with money. You know, they're not in the player development model. They're in the talent model. They're in the production model, and that's great. They can win that way. UNC can't, and we're not trying to be something that we're not, right? But here's the deal: I've never believed that there's a dearth or that there's not enough players around the country for all Division I teams to have a successful path to win. So there's still the same number of Division I schools. There's still the same number of FBS schools. There's still the same number of FCS schools. If Ohio State and Georgia and Michigan, and they want to start scooping up all what they consider the best, right? Well, there's a limit to their roster. So let's say their roster limitation is the same as ours, 110 or so, right? For every player they add, there's another player that's going somewhere else. And let's say that player from Michigan is now dropping down to Eastern Michigan. Well, where's the Eastern Michigan player going that had to make room for the player dropping down from Michigan?
Sure, yeah.
Right? And so I think, you know, instead of throwing up our hands and saying, hey, there's no way to be successful at this level, number one is all these players that are transferring different places up and down in college football, that's great. Who's being left out right now is the high school kid. And it's happening up and down the state of Colorado. I'm not interested in the players dropping down necessarily unless they're trying to come back to this state and help us build this kind of regional cohesiveness that we've got going here. But I'm interested in the high school player that nobody else is looking at because all they care about is the player who's already developed. And that to me is a way to win, but it's different than my way to win. And so my way to win is actually becoming more and more sustainable because nobody's paying attention to the high school kids right now. Nobody's recruiting them at the level that we're going to recruit them and putting in the time to develop them.
You know, what this kind of reminds me of is like the tortoise and the hare thing. not to say you're the tortoise here, Coach.
Hey,
but
I'm not offended by it.
But that's what it reminds me of. Is the hare, and so I remember the Looney Tunes version of that too, is you got Bugs Bunny, obviously, was the hare, and he's so cocky and he's sprinting all over the place. He knows he can win. He's going for the easy way every single time, and the tortoise is just like, I'm just going to stay the course.
Yeah.
Just stay on this path, and then eventually he gets there. I think you're obviously a lot better than the tortoise, but you've got it mentally, physically, all that stuff. But there is truth to that, where if you just keep grinding with your philosophy, don't go changing 100% like a lot of these schools have had to because of what their demands are with their boosters and all of that. If you just keep staying that course and scooping up these players that aren't getting looked at now because of the transfer portal, then I think at the end of the day, you know, whatever that is, next season, a couple seasons down the road, you're going to really see the fruits from that labor.
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe it. I have foreseen it. The win, and we're going to lose players that make a name for themselves, and we'll lose them, and they will transfer up. But there's going to be a guy right behind them with the same skill, and he's going to have been on the same development path. And if some of our young players can see maybe some of our veteran players that all of a sudden are going to get an enormous check to go and play at a Power 5 school, you know, for their final year or something like that after they've graduated from UNC, for example – there's nothing better that can happen because I'm not talking about building a program here on a long-term basis that has 4, 5, 6, 17 good players. We're building a whole team with NFL caliber measurables and developing those to be the best players that they can be. We will be the biggest, strongest, fastest team in the conference. And then a lot of that's going to be, okay, how does our leadership develop? Are we coaching at a high enough level? But there are plenty of players out there still at the high school level. We just signed a whole class of them that have all the tools that they need to be successful, not just at our level, but at the FBS level and beyond.
Well, and I said this about maybe a year or two ago. I said what we need to start seeing, honestly, is, and I'm not rooting for any student athlete to have a bad experience, but honestly, we do need to see some of those bad experiences, those bad cases of where a guy transfers. Maybe he's at the top of his team, but then he transfers and goes somewhere, and he becomes a forgotten person. Now, obviously, in March Madness, we're talking Dalton Connect. That's a great story. I mean, he transferred, and look what he's doing. But there's a lot more cases right now of guys that I've watched. I just saw yesterday a former CSU player. He's on this will be his third team now, and he's kind of just been a roaming guy. He was a feature guy where he was before. So I think you're going to see more of those examples of the grass isn't always greener. So stay the course. Just stay on that path. It might not seem like the quick fix. You're not the hare in this case, sprinting to the next whatever. But staying, you know, where you need to be and growing in that program with coaching staff like your coaching staff like you and what you put together might benefit you in the long run, you know, 10, 20 years down the road rather than just next year.
Our players are already seeing that. I'm very upfront with them. If they can get an amazing opportunity, I'm here for that.
Sure.
I will help them with that. I'll make calls to the schools that are looking at them. I want to make sure that they're going to the right spot. If they're going to go somewhere in the Mountain West Conference for another $1,000 a month and try to move on from FCS football, that's not worth it because you may not be the feature player. You may not get developed in the way that we're promising developing you. You're living that every day. You see that. You know that. I believe we can earn that trust. What we're looking for at this level is, you know, come here, help us strive for championships, get your degree or significantly progress toward it, and then go for something life-changing, you know, whether that's the NFL or whether that's the Power Five, like that is in every way. Just like, you know, initially, I don't know if you remember this, but initially when players started to come out early for drafts in the NBA and the NFL, coaches were against that sometimes. You never hear that anymore. You never hear a college coach say, well, I don't want him to leave. He's just a sophomore. That shouldn't be happening. Oh, if a guy can get drafted in any sport and have a, you know, I mean, in baseball maybe is different, but in football or basketball, you're drafted and you're drafted early and you have this opportunity, everybody's excited about that now. And I think NIL is going to go the same direction eventually. We're not going to try to hold these guys back. What we're trying to hold them back from is don't just go somewhere and be depth. Don't go somewhere for what seems like a lot of money now, but in the grand scheme of your life, that's not a lot of money.
Well, there's a lot of players that can get, if they just get that opportunity, maybe they go, and I've always talked about this with football, maybe you're a 3 or 4 star guy and you go to Alabama, but you're the 3rd, 4th string running back and you just get left there for 2 years. Where you go to somewhere else, maybe you go to a UNC, maybe you go, you know, somewhere in the state of Colorado, and you're the featured guy. And now suddenly you're on the map. You're on the map now, and your stock's going up. Your confidence is going up. The way you do things is going up, as opposed to just getting lost on the bench for 2 to 3 years. And maybe that's your career. Maybe that's how it ends up. You were always a career backup, but you could come here and be a superstar.
You know, what's really interesting in terms of development, and I'll go back to Miles Killebrew. It was such a great visit that he had with our guys. But one of the things he was talking about was when he's looking at the scouting report and he sees he's looking at the opponent's punt personnel. So Miles gets to kind of design some of the block schemes from week to week. He looks for the player coming from the blue blood schools that's playing punt guard or punt tackle, because he knows that if there's a player in the NFL from Alabama, he probably has never played special teams, and so that's the guy he's going to attack. Now, if he sees a player from a Big Sky school playing guard or tackle or wing on punt, he knows that he's made it in the league because he plays special teams. He probably played special teams to help because his team needs every advantage they can get at FCS football. All the best players need to be on the field as much as possible. So he said, that's a polished player. But you give me a player from Alabama or Ohio State who's playing right guard or right wing on the punt, I'm going after him because he doesn't care about special teams. He never did. He's always been the 5-star guy. He's always had everything handed to him, and he still resents that he's not the starter and he's playing on special teams.
Wow, that is – talk about a study right there.
That's a study. That was unsolicited, just something that he told me and some of the guys, and I was like, wow, that's the key to what you're talking about. When you say, you know, stay at a UNC as long as you're still developing – don't go to a place where you're going to maybe cease to develop because you're just providing depth.
Well, again, I think that's true with any job. You know, you start rising up, you're doing good at your job, and then you get another job opportunity comes up. And are you ready to be the small fish in the big pond, or do you need to continue to grow and be a gigantic fish in the smaller pond and just keep growing, growing, growing so that when you do make that transition or graduate from college or just go into the workforce, you're ready for it. But if you're still kind of – you're a medium fish in a small pond and then you go – you could be in trouble, and that's what I think we're seeing with a lot of these athletes nowadays.
In business, you understand it, right? You'd never leave – you wouldn't leave an opportunity to be a difference maker for one organization to go and make no difference in the next just because it's a Fortune 500 company, right?
Yeah.
You're in every way, I think all of us want to be – you know, that are motivated that way, we want to be difference makers. And if you're making a difference somewhere, make sure if you're making a move, you're still going to be a difference maker.
And long term too. You know, there's a long term plan for you. It's not just, hey, the coaches are like, if this guy doesn't work out, great, we'll just go get the other one. You can just sit over there for a while.
You've got to
look at that long term.
If they bring you in that way, they'll bring the next guy in that way.
Yeah. Coach, before we let you go, I want to talk about this. This is a really significant story. Miles McClarity, talk to us about him, his journey, what he's doing, and some of the things he's going through right now.
Yeah, Miles McClarity is, the biggest inspiration to me, and I think a lot of the guys on our team that are aware of what he's going through. He doesn't wear it on his sleeve. He doesn't talk about it, but Miles is going through cancer treatment, and he's been doing all the training, and you and I have sat here and talked about it, and I think you can hear in my voice, we're setting out to be the hardest working team in the country. We're setting out to make this so difficult. Miles he's going through a cancer diagnosis of acute lymphoblastic leukemia, ALL it's called, and he'll be done with his treatment. He won't be done with his treatment until May 2025. And he's in there every day. These are grueling workouts. I've talked to you about designing workouts that 50% of the team fails, right? And he's in there. He's doing these workouts. He's actually gaining weight and strength while he's on these cancer treatments, which is, you know, his doctors are shocked about. And, you know, I think he's setting an example. So I asked him, you know, I said, Miles, this is amazing to me what you're doing. And you show up every day and you have this attendance record and this work ethic that everybody respects. Other guys are, you know, using ridiculous excuses for being late at times or missing a workout, or they're getting sick. And here you are, you're showing up literally like dragging yourself off the floor and finishing these workouts. Do you mind if I share it? I was thinking about sharing it on the podcast.
Sure.
And he didn't even hesitate. He said, Coach, I know there's kids out there that are going through what I'm going through, and I've already heard from them because some of this stuff has already been publicized, and feel free to share anything that you want. So yeah, Miles McClarity is another Fountain Fort Carson guy. He came in mid-year for us, so he just joined us in January. We've got we want to make sure and develop him slowly in terms of the contact part of the game because, you know, the fact that he's going through treatment, his muscles can grow, but there's also at least short-term damage to bones and ligaments that are potentially weakened from some of the treatments that he's going through. So he's still going to do all the practices and stuff. We're just going to limit some of the contact. But what an amazing, impressive young man and an inspiration to anybody on our team. If there's anyone on our team that's, you know, not motivated by getting up and getting in the weight room and getting out there and doing the conditioning that we're asking him to do, just look over and take a brief look at Miles. And I think all those questions kind of leave your head. So he's a huge leader for us.
I can't even begin to imagine, after we were texting, Coach, and you kind of let me know what we, you know, some of the topics we'd bring up. I went and just checked out his social media account and just how active he is. And, you know, he posted this one back in September of 23, just cancer tried to beat me, but I made the winning play. And obviously back in September, it's for football and pediatric cancer awareness month is what he put out there. But I mean, what a phenomenal story that you're not going to get in a lot of places. You're not going to hear this very often because that's just determination, right? It's hard as heck. I can't even imagine to play football at this level, but to do it with that going on too, what a phenomenal young man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, just such an inspiration for everybody. We all, you know, it's I heard the phrase once. I used to feel bad about the fact that I didn't have nice shoes until I saw the man with no feet.
Mm.
You know, that's kind of like,
yeah,
Yeah. When you look at miles, like, okay, whatever you think's going on that day, you didn't have time to get the right breakfast, or you're not feeling as strong, or you're not feeling motivated that day, you're feeling anxious, whatever's going on in all these guys' lives. We've got 110 players on our team. Take a look at miles.
Again, you kind of mentioned this, but, you know, as far as what he's hearing from doctors and everything, how's that journey going? Is it looking pretty positive for him at this stage, or is it still a lot of unknowns?
It is, yeah. He regularly goes to Denver and meets with specialists. Our team here at UNC, our whole medical team, from the athletic trainers through the team doctor, they're working in conjunction with Miles' personal doctors and making sure that we take this thing. You know, we're looking for a long-term success story here. And there's right now daily success and inspiration. But in terms of him, like, actually playing and contributing on the field, we don't want to rush anything for foolish reasons. I mean, he's a true freshman. He delayed his initial enrollment, so he could have been here in the fall, but now he's with us this spring training, and he'll still be a true freshman come this fall. So he's got a long career left at UNC, and it's just, you know, I think it's all of our responsibility to build his whole 5-6 years here in a way that can lead to the eventual best success and not put him in any kind of undue risk. He's got the 100% green light to train, and he does that, and you can actually see a difference in the way he kind of carries his body from, you know, right after a treatment until kind of as the next one gets closer and closer and he's getting back to full strength. And those who have been through cancer treatments kind of probably understand some of that battle. But like I said, no player more inspirational than him right now to me personally.
I absolutely love that story. I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad Miles was willing to let you know, have that conversation for a moment. Anyway, but that's a guy. Yeah, we'll be rooting for that guy, you know, big time. That's just another hopeful success story. But I think the fact that he's doing what he's doing right now, obviously, is already extremely successful. Coach, always fun to get into this. I know next week we'll get into kind of more of the coaching staff changes, spring football. Let's get into some details there. And then maybe I'll draw up that secret play for you. And, you know, we'll be ready to throw that out there and shock the world.
We're on the edge of our seat. We will keep the playbook leaflets open until we get your play in there. We won't finalize anything, and we'll make sure we build the whole offense and defense around your plays.
I did tell Aaron. I said, hey, you know, if I'm at a game or something and you guys are needing a key play, just look up to the stands and I'll be there. I'll give you the nod. And you're like, oh, it's the play. Yeah. It's time. It'll be like a Disney movie. Yeah. It's going to be phenomenal. Coach, always appreciate it, man. I'm glad you guys made it back okay last week.
Thank you.
Obviously, it was a tough go with that storm for a lot of people. So we're glad you were able to get back, and always good to get you back in the studio.
Thanks so much. Great to be here again.
All right, we'll get episode 7 out. It'll be on our, through my whole show podcast, so through Apple, Spotify, all of that. But then now available at 1310kfk.com. If you just search KFK podcast, you'll find Football 52 with Ed Lamb and yours truly, Coach. We'll get right back at it next week. Looking forward to it as always.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you folks later. Again, it's been Football 52 as a part of our podcast network on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.